Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Most of you, well, at least some of you, are accustomed to hearing preachers read what the Bible says about beverage alcohol. If you have not heard or read the message lately, I shall refresh your memories concerning the Bible's message on strong drink. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Proverbs 20:1. Hear, my son, and be wise, and direct your mind in the way. Be not among wine-bibbers, or among gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man in rags. Proverbs 23:19-21. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? They that tarry long at wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not on the wine when it is red, when it gives his color in the cup, when it moves itself aright. At the last it bites like a serpent, and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women, and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, you shall be as one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or as one who lies upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:29-35. There are dozens of comments and observations I would like to make on these powerful passages from Proverbs. These statements express God's attitude toward the evils of strong drink. Although such teachings are not very popular today, not even among church members, they express what God Himself wants us to know about the destructiveness of beverage alcohol. Can any person do better than to listen to the wisdom of God's holy book? How much grief could the human race have avoided if all human beings had simply listened to the Word of God? I do not for one moment want to minimize the Bible's unambiguous teaching on this very vital topic. But I shall take a little different approach to strong drink in our lesson today. In case you're tempted to think that only uneducated, narrow-minded, and ignorant preachers condemn strong drink, I shall read to you a number of statements from political leaders, scientific authorities, prominent literary figures, and others, all of which show the stupidity of drinking beverage alcohol. When I read to you the views of a man like Benjamin Franklin, I am not endorsing Franklin's philosophical and theological views. Franklin rejected the Bible's teaching on the deity of Christ and on other fundamental elements of New Testament Christianity. But Franklin was a very wise man in many respects. He had seen men destroy themselves and deprive their families of life necessities because those men were devoted to drinking. Please listen to Benjamin Franklin, one of the authors of the American Constitution, the greatest political document ever produced. In the American Issue, March-April 1975, Franklin is quoted as saying, "No man ever drank lard into his tub, or flour into his sack, nor meal into his barrel, nor happiness into his home, nor God into his heart." Number 2, page 1. All of the quotations in our lesson are from the American Issue, March-April 1975, unless otherwise noted. The only people who ever get rich through alcoholic beverages are the manufacturers, the distributors, and the retailers. Those who get rich from strong drink are trading and trafficking with the bodies, minds, and souls of their constituents. They are destroying homes, businesses, and professions. Incidentally, if alcoholic beverages are so great for people and so desirable as social lubricants, why do distillers like Jack Daniel at Lynchburg, Tennessee, discourage their employees from drinking whiskey and other alcoholic beverages? What would you think of an automobile manufacturer who urged his employees not to drive his own products? Do you know why Jack Daniel does not want its workers to use alcoholic beverages? They know that drinkers do not make good employees and can be hazards in a manufacturing plant. How tragic that a man would use the family's resources for purchasing whiskey or beer or wine when his children are inadequately clothed and fed. But sane men would not do that, would they? They almost certainly would not, unless they were addicted to drinking. Do you remember the words of King Solomon? For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Proverbs 23:21. There are millions of homeless and hungry children whose parents have squandered their money and energy on strong drink. Ask any social worker if you think I have exaggerated. Do Jack Daniel Distillery and Pritchard Rum Factory have any guilt for selling such destructive beverages? You know they do. The next three excerpts are from men whose names I know, but who are otherwise unknown to me. The American Issue quotes these words from Reginald Smith. There's nothing like a hangover to occupy a head that wasn't used the night before. The second quotation is from John B. Goff. Every moderate drinker could abandon the intoxicating cup if he would. Every inebriate drinker would if he could. Finally, John Neal has observed, drinking water neither makes a man sick, nor in death, nor his wife a widow. Volume 2, page 1. I do not need to tell you how true these sentiments are. You know drinking gives many people excruciating headaches. You also know that alcoholic beverages are addictive, extremely addictive. Solomon asked, "When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again." Proverbs 23:35. Alcohol does make a man sick, leads to foolish financial practices, and leaves many widows in its wake. To deny those facts reveals prejudice or ignorance or both. William Penn, an influential American patriot, made this wise observation: the smaller the drink, the clearer the head, and the cooler the blood. Volume 2, page 1. Sir Francis Bacon was unquestionably one of the world's greatest scientists and philosophers. He was also an astute observer of human conduct. His judgment should carry great weight with thinking people. All the crimes on earth do not destroy so many of the human race, nor alienate so much property as drunkenness. Page 1. If you will simply remember that between 150,000 and 200,000 people die every year because of strong drink, and billions of dollars worth of property is destroyed every year because of someone's drinking, you will not be tempted to argue with Sir Francis Bacon. Giuseppe Garibaldi, an Italian military hero, stated very succinctly, "Bacchus has drowned more men than Neptune." Page 1. Just in case you have forgotten your mythology, Bacchus was the god of wine in Greek and Roman religion. Neptune was the god of the sea in Roman mythology. Garibaldi was simply asserting that more men have been lost to strong drink than drowned at sea. Incidentally, most boating accidents in American waters are attributable to drunkenness. I remember one particularly tragic accident. Five men and a teenage boy were fishing just below the dam at Gilbertsville, Kentucky, about 15 or 20 miles from Paducah. All five of the men were drunk. They allowed their boat to get too close to the dam. The water from the dam ripped the boat apart. All five of the men and the boy drowned. Those who witnessed the accident said the cries of the boy could be heard for great distances. The boy tried to climb the dam, but the force of the water washed him back to his death. Boating and drinking, like driving or flying and drinking, do not mix. They are a deadly combination. Thomas Jefferson was certainly one of the most intelligent men ever to serve as President of the United States. Even though he was not present when the American Constitution was adopted, he was almost certainly one of the most influential persons in the adoption of the Constitution, the greatest political document ever written. Jefferson could express himself powerfully and yet very simply. His words concerning strong drink should be enlightening and challenging. Of all calamities, intemperance is the greatest. Number 2, page 1. When Jefferson used the word intemperance, he probably had in mind more than the use of strong drink. But there can be no question he was speaking about misusing alcoholic beverages. Former President William Jefferson Clinton said he wanted to pattern his presidency after that of Thomas Jefferson. Can you imagine his saying, "Of all calamities, intemperance is the greatest"? You may not be a fan of William Shakespeare's writing, but you surely know the beauty and the power of his plays and of his other literary productions. He was one of the greatest students of human behavior who ever lived. His observations about the destructiveness of strong drink should awaken all of us to its dangers. O God, that men should put an enemy in their mouths to steal away their brains. Page 1. Was Shakespeare right about alcohol stealing away our brains? History is strewn with alcohol's broken homes, broken hearts, and broken lives. Hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children have lost their lives because of someone's drinking. Unquestionably, alcohol steals away men's and women's brains. Dr. L.C. Goffin, a physician who has served for many years on the Board of Education in Los Angeles, made these perceptive comments on drinking. Since alcohol is a narcotic drug, psychologically habit-forming, and resulting in addiction in at least 10% of moderate drinkers, it is incumbent on the public schools to teach abstinence rather than moderation. When dealing with narcotics, moderation is dangerous doctrine. Page 3. Speaking of the addictiveness of beverage alcohol, think for a moment of this little poem. Men make strong chains of toughest steel by forging link to link. So too does liquor addiction grow, drink by drink by drink. A few years ago, Preferred Risk Mutual Insurance Company of Des Moines, Iowa, published a little booklet entitled Success If You Don't Drink. Included in the booklet are the testimonials of a number of successful Americans who do not drink and who oppose its consumption. Marilyn Vanderburgh, Miss America of 1958, says, "I don't drink. All my life I have been interested in sports and clean living, and consequently, drinking liquor never interested me. When I entered college, I felt that it was not necessary to drink in order to be accepted." Page 1. Roy Rogers, who needs no introduction to most Americans, had sought to live a clean life. His words about drinking are very important. If I were asked the question, "Roy, why don't you drink?" I would think the most honest answer I could give would be, "I don't think it is necessary. And I don't. My wife, Dale Evans, and I feel we have about as happy a life as we can hope for. And we have not found that happiness in cocktail parlors, but rather in everyday activities." Page 3. For a number of years, Elizabeth Keys served as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from West Virginia. Congressman Key offers these views on drinking. "One of the greatest tragedies of our time is that all too many young men and women think they must drink to be accepted socially today. An invitation or polite urging is often misinterpreted as acceptance or else. A realistic appraisal of the non-drinkers in any young group will often lead to the realization that they are respected and admired for their strength of character, their firmness of belief. The boy or girl who is different in these respects possesses cleanness and purpose that will be an invaluable assistance later in life. The road to success is paved with self-denials of those things which are harmful and unnecessary." Page 4. I wonder how many members of Congress have the courage of Representative Elizabeth Key. Dick Button, world champion figure skater, insists, "Alcohol and tobacco are not compatible to anyone attempting perfection in sports. That is the reason no athlete striving to reach the top should indulge in either of these habits, which are harmful to health and success in athletic competition." Page 5. Along the same line, Bob Richards, Olympic pole vault champion, says, "From any point of view, religiously, athletically, scientifically, and socially, drinking is utter nonsense. I strongly advise any young person who desires to excel in any realm of life to abstain completely from the use of a substance that mars and ruins human life. Page 7. The words of Senator Richard Neuberger from Oregon should make an impression on governmental leaders and on others. I make no bones about my dislike of intoxicating beverages. I don't like the taste of liquor. I don't like the effects of liquor. And I don't like the results of drinking liquor. I have never understood how a brain befogged by alcohol could endure the tensions and strains of government decisions. Page 9. On Thursday, November the 23rd, 1961, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution published an article with the title, "Alcohol to Blame for Half of Cases at San Quentin," says prison psychiatrist. Dr. David Schmidt, San Quentin psychiatrist, says alcohol is a factor in approximately half of the arrivals at the big state prison on the shore of San Francisco Bay. He insists that alcohol is not only a national problem, but an international problem as well. Dr. Schmidt gives these facts about alcohol which Americans need to consider. From 10 to 20% of the patients in state hospitals suffer from alcoholic conditions. 5 to 50% of the traffic accidents are caused by alcohol in some degree. There are thousands of admissions to Bellevue, the famous psychiatric hospital in New York, and 1,000 here in San Francisco each year from alcoholism. And 50% of the poisoning deaths are due to alcohol. There are other disturbing facts in Dr. Schmidt's article, but these should suffice to warn of the dangers of drinking beverage alcohol. 20th Century Christian, a journal published in Nashville, Tennessee, printed a little article entitled, "My Account with Alcohol." I believe it is worth reading to you. A thick-set, ugly-looking fellow was seated on a bench in the public park and seemed to be reading some writing on a sheet of paper which he held in his hand. "You seem to be reading something," I said. "Yes, I've been figuring my account with old alcohol to see how we stand." "And he comes out ahead, I suppose?" "Every time. And he has lied like 60. "How did you come to have dealings with him in the first place?" "That's what I've been writing. You see, he promised to make a man of me, but he has made me a beast. Then he said he would brace me up, and he made me go staggering around and threw me into a ditch. He said he would steady my nerves, but instead he gave me delirium tremens. He said he would give me strength, but he has made me helpless." "To be sure," I said. "He promised me courage. Then what followed?" "Then he made me a coward, for I beat my sick wife and kicked my little child. He said he would brighten my wits, but instead he made me a tramp." If you think this brief article has overdrawn the situation, you should do some research on the effects of drinking beverage alcohol. One young woman was accused of being radical on the effects of strong drink. She was motivated to write the following poem. "Go, feel what I have felt. Go, bear what I have borne. Sink neath a blow a father dealt and the cold world scorned. Thus struggle on from year to year, thy soul relieved the scalding tear. Go, weep as I have wept over a loved father's fall. See every cherished promise swept, youth's sweetness turned to gall. Hope's faded flowers strewn all the way that led me up to woman's day. Go, kneel as I have knelt, implore, beseech, and pray. Strive the besotted heart to melt, the downward course to stay. Be cast with bitter curses aside, thy prayers burlesque, thy tears defied. Go stand where I have stood, and see the strong man bow, with gnashing teeth, lips bathed in blood, and cold and livid brow. Go catch his wondering glance and see there mirrored his soul's misery. Go hear what I have heard, the sobs of sad despair, as memory's feeling found has stirred, and its revealing there have told him what he might have been had he the drunkard's fate foreseen. Go to thy mother's side, and her crushed spirit cheer, thine own deep anguish hide, wipe from her cheek the tear. Mark her dimmed eye, her furrowed brow, the gray hair that streaks her dark hair now. The toil-worn frame, the trembling limb, and trace the ruin back to him, whose plighted faith in early youth promised eternal love and truth, but who, forsworn, hath yielded up the promise in the deadly cup. And let her down from love and light, from all that made her pathway bright, and chained her there mid want and strife, that lowly thing, a drunkard's wife, and stamped on childhood's brow so mild, that withering blight, a drunkard's child. Go, hear and feel and know all that my soul has felt and known. Then look within the wine cup's glow, see if the brightness can atone. Think of its flavor you would try, if all proclaim 'tis drink or die. Tell me I hate the bowl. Hate is a feeble word. I loathe, I abhor, my very soul by strong disgust is stirred, whene'er I see or hear or tell of the dark beverage of hell. Through the years I have collected a great amount of information about strong drink. I have no idea about the sources of some of this material. The excerpt I am about to read is a case in point. The brief article has the title, Alcohol's False Claims, and was printed by Christian Publishing Society. I know nothing about the organization or the author, but the ideas are valid, whatever their source. Please listen carefully to Alcohol's False Claims. Alcohol gives strength. If so, why do athletes abstain while training for a contest which requires strength to win? Alcohol gives endurance. If so, why do employers always require absolute abstinence from those who are engaged in difficult work? Alcohol steadies the nerves. If so, why do marksmen, surgeons, and men whose living depends upon a keen eye and a steady hand let alcohol severely alone? Alcohol lengthens life. If so, why do so many insurance companies charge a lower premium to abstainers? Alcohol brightens life. If so, why are the darkest and dirtiest places always those in which drink shops are the most numerous? And why are the worst crimes, the most brutal assaults, and the most terrible murders always mixed with drinking? The fact is, alcohol is a mocker, promising one thing and giving another, and whosoever is deceived by it is not wise. There are a few more brief excerpts I will read to you before our time expires. Stanley N. Barnes of the Criminal Court of Los Angeles County affirms, in 80% of the cases coming before my court, liquor is involved in the crime. In 9 times out of 10, alcohol is involved in a person's getting into trouble the second time. Surely no one would accuse George Bernard Shaw of being a champion of conventional morality. But Shaw knew the damage drinking beverage alcohol does to human beings. He expressed these sentiments. Alcohol knocks off the last inch of efficiency, which in all really fine works makes the difference between first-rate and second-rate work. President John F. Kennedy called Thomas Jefferson the greatest mind ever to occupy the White House. That may be a legitimate assessment of Jefferson's mind. Jefferson apparently despised beverage alcohol, as the following excerpt shows. The habit of using ardent spirits by men in office has occasioned more injury to the public and more trouble to me than all other causes. Were I to commence my administration again, the first question I would ask respecting a candidate for office would be, does he use ardent spirits? Thomas Alva Edison was unquestionably America's greatest inventor. He explained his reason for not using beverage alcohol. I have better use for my brain than to poison it with alcohol. To put alcohol in the human brain is like putting sand in the bearing of an engine. Our Daniel Watkins' book, An Encyclopedia of Compelling Quotations, includes 4 brief excerpts on alcohol. Nancy Astor was very specific about her opposition to drinking. One reason I don't drink is that I want to know when I am having a good time. Watkins quotes the following Jewish proverb, the innkeeper loves the drunkard, but not for a son-in-law. One Roman writer has affirmed, "To dispute with a drunkard is to debate with an empty house." Seneca, a Stoic philosopher and the tutor of Nero, called drunkenness nothing else but voluntary madness. Page 26. My purpose today has not been to elevate the views of men above the Word of Almighty God. But I wanted you to know that devout religious people are not the only ones who know the horrors and tragedies associated with strong drink. You would think that modern Americans, with their superior knowledge of what alcohol does to the mind and to the rest of the human body, would avoid strong drink like the plague. In our nation, where alertness is so very vital to our driving, to our working in industrial plants, and in many other situations, we should leave alcohol alone. Lives would be saved, homes would be happier, and the nation's highways would be safer. For the welfare of our nation and our eternal souls, let us not only leave alcohol alone, but let us oppose it with all of our might. I honestly believe, from a scriptural viewpoint, that is God's view of the matter. Thank you for listening today, and may God richly bless you.